Good morning. Today is Thursday, June 28, 2018. It is 9 a.m. We are convening as the Josephine County Board of Commissioners for the County Administration Workshop in the BCC Conference Room. President, our Commissioners Hare and Morgan. We're going to go out of order this morning and we'll start with a quarterly update with Facility Services with our Director, Ryan Johnson.
I'm here till 10 o'clock.
Okay. Good morning. The fairgrounds, you're looking at a concept drawing of the arena and some of the proposed ADA changes, adding restrooms, seating areas, and so forth.
ADA seating areas.
Yes.
Yeah. That's great.
We haven't got prices back on the concept of the metal roof. The look of the roof, the longevity, the low maintenance.
Yeah.
It all is
ideal. Makes a lot of sense that it's totally conducive to it.
Yeah, we'll start getting some costs back to a point with Strauss and Siebert where we can put together some construction drawings, nail down some of the finishes as we go.
I like the two-tone, the green element, but I think the roof should be white for heat purposes. Mm-hmm. And I envision the siding being a little bit more of, not a redwood color, hard to explain, but almost like the way fir would patina out naturally comes into the color that I was looking for.
Okay.
So, a little less of a gold hue and a little bit more of a red, but not bad. Close.
Yeah, and the direction that I gave them was basically stick with earth tones,
yes,
natural colors,
yep,
for the concept drawing, and then we can nail down the shades. And
yep.
Commissioner DeYoung had also mentioned the possibility of working with Duralast and see if they would be willing to contribute anything.
Yeah. Call it the Duralast Arena or whatever, you know, Verizon or Motor Center.
Exactly.
Let's.
And their materials are white, so.
Yeah, that would work.
It
great.
Works.
Isn't that what's on there right now?
Fabric.
It is. It is. It's a not a very good product. I mean, it was early on in, in the Duralast cycle.
Like
so.
20 years. 30 years ago?
Yeah.
20 years ago?
It was early 80s, I believe. So.
It's a while ago.
Yeah. So I know they're eager to get it moved forward, but I'm not sure where the funding is going to come from for the roof.
I know. Yeah, it's got to get kind of settled out. I think the siding is one thing that's fairly doable, in my opinion. But you don't want to be making siding adjustments if there's any other structural things, but it doesn't look like there's, you know, nothing built into the structure, so you could put it on just fine, and then, you know, at the point of restrooms or whatever, you can make those adjustments.
Yeah, and we try to make more of the modifications, as you can see, kind of to the outside.
Yeah.
So then we don't open Pandora's box and, you know, things are grandfathered currently.
Well,
you start changing too much
you would
inside.
Reduce seating capacity, which is already is pretty limited.
Yeah.
Is there any internal design modifications?
The loft on, I guess it'd be the west end.
Yeah.
We're looking at removing that and gaining another 20 or so feet in the arena.
Oh,
that's also the area that's settling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it would help with the barrel racing if they got another 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And would you do stands up there or box?
It would just be basically right now they use portable stairs to have people come down when they have different, like the circus and so forth. So we would create on each end of the west side would be some stairs down, so they're not moving steps in
and
out.
over that, if you extended the arena out under the current roof footprint, right?
Yes.
Would you repurpose any of that space up there?
The loft area would go away,
And
then the dirt area would just extend to, to the doorway, except where the seating area is, would be stairs going down and an ADA ramp.
Okay.
But at any point, that could be changed as we move forward. And courtyard area could be added on that exterior there. So.
Okay. Well, we don't need to spend too much time on this, but I think funding is a consideration that, you know, we've got to get that dialed in. And
I know Rotary has committed 3 years of the Duck Derby, at least towards the arena. But
yeah.
So get out and buy your ducks.
There you go.
That's right.
Well, Well, I'm happy to work on the financial element of figuring out a creative way to kind of shore that up. But, you know, until we have some commitment, if we have 3 years committed, we know what the historic average has been, I don't mind the county shoring up some of that or loaning it to this project with the intent that it's paid back. But there's got to be some sort of a an agreement with Rotary that you're good for this, right? You can't just say, well, the county steals from Peter to pay Paul, that, oh, well, you covered it. No, Peter doesn't have his, so you've got to... Yeah.
That was my concern, if we go that route, that we would lose out on...
They say, well, you did it, we're good. Well, no, we didn't really do it, we just... So,
and it's not a huge fund, I mean, it's not a... I don't know how much they're able to come up with each year. I can find out what their average, but I know they're also doing a project at Jubilee Park, relocating light poles that are within the baseball field, so people don't have to run into the light poles anymore in the outfield.
Well, and they're rotting, so they're old. They need to be replaced. Okay. Well, we'll work on that. But you don't have authority to proceed on anything, hardly, until we get funding lined up.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I should go as far as separating out the construction documents and put together specs for the roof, maybe a metal and a Duralast.
Yeah, as long as we're 100% certain the facility's sound, I'd hate to find out, you know, at some point that, wait a second, we just put a new roof on a building that we've got some serious structural challenges, but you're sure that it's...
Yeah, no, we had an engineer look at it.
Even the trusses with the pigeons and stuff?
Yeah. They're solid. There's a few things they recommended for lateral bracing.
Okay.
But we had a local engineering firm go through it and give us a basic report on it.
Is there any, I think it would behoove us to do something to keep the pigeons off of some of those rafters.
Yeah.
Either mitigating the pigeons or...
And pigeons are, they're an ongoing theme out there right now. The grandstands are getting overrun by them.
I've heard that.
Yeah. The pavilion's got them. I don't know. I'm wondering if the work on the bridge has displaced them.
Totally.
And they found the fairgrounds. So, yeah, it's a new challenge. So maybe
they're,
I can work with
protected.
We can get animal control, get some cats, and turn them loose.
Turn it into a cat house? That'll be lovely for the horses.
What's next?
Just a couple other projects. Corrections. We're working on the yellow house on the corner. That's coming along. We're
hoping, and you guys are doing that in-house?
We're doing it in-house. We're going to subcontract some of the electrical and plumbing, but hoping to have that all squared away by the end of August so they can start moving in.
Did you do a yard sale, or what did you do with all the stuff?
Oh, it's a major undertaking, you know, 50 years of communication. You know, we have old tube-type radios, and, you know, it's all junk.
eBay would probably do well for all that stuff.
We need somebody from the county that does nothing but eBay.
Yeah.
We keep them busy all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, most of it is, there's not much value. They are creating kind of a historic display case that we'll put in our office.
Okay,
old stuff. So, couple projects we're hoping to finally get going on is the cart access in the next 30 days or so. We'll get that going. Also, the resealing of the parking lots and restriping. They're in pretty poor condition, starting to degrade. So if we don't reseal them, we're going to end up doing an overlay or something.
Well, we talked about, I think the board approved the 210 Tacoma overlay or whatever you wanted to do out there.
Oh, okay.
And included in that other contract. You said something about $7,000 or something.
Yep.
It was reasonable.
Okay.
And I thought that was fine to get that done. So.
Okay. Yeah, I think we have five total that we were going to do,
but
not Hugo Hills. We weren't
no.
going to do Hugo Hills.
No.
Okay.
Or planning.
Or planning. No.
None of that area.
Corrections, jury parking.
We'll appreciate those.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Right. The other one is the space allocation.
Yes.
Working with Ethos Project Management and a few different scenarios.
Okay.
And the evidence facility, starting to move forward with that.
Great.
And some concept drawings will be coming. I'll work with the sheriff.
Perfect.
See what they'd like to see.
I think that's perfect timing with our evidence manager being replaced and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can get somebody who's like, well, what would you like to see?
Yeah.
And what's going to work for you, and then having to run over there every time they need evidence for some sort of a thing just seems like a pain.
Yeah. Well, imagine when they were stationed here.
That would be, well, I don't know how that happens.
Yeah.
Where would you store everything?
Well, they have a cage back there that would have locks, and every day the evidence person would come over and retrieve evidence and take it back over.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you need it for courts?
Well, you call things, you request things at different times, but yeah.
Depending on if there's a court here or there.
Yeah, and we'll get input.
You'd have one place that wouldn't have to come.
Yeah, one.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, and we'll be reaching out to other counties and cities and see what they're using, what works, what doesn't work.
Great.
Yeah. So, unless you have any questions on a specific project, and we have a lot of them. So.
I'm curious about the firearms for the Justice Building upgrade.
Okay.
And then the updates at Ambassador, just kind of an update where we're at with all that.
Ambassador, as far as the ADA ramp, is that what we're...
Sure.
How was the lead?
Yeah, that one, hard to get bids is an understatement. Nobody wants to pour concrete for that little piece, but I do have somebody, I need at least two bids. So that one's kind of just been on the back burner. Yeah. So
it seems like it's a fair amount of concrete.
Yeah, it is.
An 80, to get to that level,
it's going to have
somewhere.
To have a,
But a lot of these contractors are now ramping up on some of the residential developments and so forth. Some of the contractors we've worked with in the past are willing to break away and do that. It's just kind of one of the projects for us. It's kind of just keeps dropping down the list.
Yeah, so. And that's not exactly a high priority, but it needs to be done eventually. The nice thing about that project, different than the evidence and the paving, is that has to be done before September. So if you don't get in the queue on the evidence or the redo on the side, on the parking lots, you're going to have to wait till next year. But that, you can pour concrete
year
round.
And that's kind of how we try to look at it, is try to get the stuff done in the summer.
It has to be.
That has to be done. And yeah, unfortunately, that one didn't get done this winter. So the other one, the fire alarm. We got one bid back. It's not complete, and we're waiting on the second bid. But it does look like it's going to come back around 100K when it's all said and done. So hopefully in the next two, 3 weeks.
We were hoping for 50. We always hope for 50.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but I don't think a fire alarm is something you can compromise on, and the fact that we don't have it up to 100% satisfactory needs to be addressed. So.
And yeah, and that'll bring it up. So we have strobes for the hearing impaired. It'll be a non-proprietary system.
Is that the entire building? Because we don't have, does that have a strobe? Mine, I don't know.
On this building, they were put in wherever they were required.
Okay.
So we should be up to snuff. There is, some will be replaced because they're proprietary devices.
And we're moving away from that.
We're moving away from that because we don't want to be pigeonholed into one contractor.
Yeah.
In the valley that does that, so
or the state, or
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and when it goes down, you know, you're waiting, and we can't wait when our fire alarm system's down.
Okay.
So.
I'm just wondering about a central structure, and I mean, is this something a grant could potentially cover? Is this something we would want to try to look for some funding through a grant?
I've looked at a few different ones to see if we qualify. And so far I haven't seen anything. And Sarah's always been pretty good about forwarding anything that she sees.
Well, maybe check in with her. It might not be possible, but at least we check that box. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
It seems like more of a fundamental thing that counties could be responsible for as opposed to something ancillary for, like an earthquake. I bet there's stuff for that. Structural seismic things. But
some security stuff I see, you know, but yeah, nothing for fire.
Well, part of that card lock system was the idea that we would have cameras as well throughout the building, and an ability for each office to have like a monitor that we could just take a look at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that bridged the gap for me in the court security conversations about, do you have multiple alarms that signal for different kinds of things, or do you have an ability to kind of look at what's going on in the building? Mm-hmm. And you hear an alarm, or you don't hear an alarm, but you can always kind of take a look and see what's going on in the hallways and the common areas.
Well, and I went to that preparedness workshop last week, and I probably should have a follow-up conversation with you guys about some of the recommendations and such, but more than anything, computer notification, phone notifications
yeah.
are really where people are moving towards, that every computer in the building will have
something
pops up. And that seems to me to make more sense when the courts don't have cell phones or something else
yeah.
like that. There's, but, you know, the other thing just to reiterate is they talked about the run, hide, fight. And that's not like, you know, when we were kids, we had stop, drop, roll for
right.
fire.
Yeah.
That's the order you're supposed to go in. Run, hide, fight is not a specific order. It's you do what you have to in that moment.
Yeah.
That's in your best circumstance of how do you survive and keep, you know, that kind of stuff. And so there's a lot of things to talk about. But, yeah, I think cameras is a good thing, but they're not
fail-safe. It was just really neat to be able to go up to courts and see all the common area, pretty
right.
much, about what's going on at any given time.
And for me, it'll be a little trick on how do we tie the two together, because theirs is
separate.
Their system
I don't,
complete.
They
so
don't need to be tied together, necessarily.
Maybe we just have a separate monitor that they can look at what's going on downstairs. We could
yeah.
have one, a separate monitor
yeah.
or something.
So
different
fit,
link.
Yeah. Well, you'll
you
figure
click
that
on.
Out.
Yeah. So.
Something would be great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Any questions anytime? I'd be happy to discuss it.
Thank
Lots
you.
Going on. Thanks
yeah.
a lot.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too, Ryan.
You too.
Okay, we're going to move back to our agenda order with Department of Business Community Development. Director Schmelzer is here with the proposed text amendments for housing.
Morning, Commissioner.
Morning.
Morning.
So I've sent you the draft, basically, that was put together, and it's a lot of pages. It's a lot to comprehend. So I boiled it down to just some general slides that I presented to the Plan Commission last Monday,
okay.
or this past Monday. And everything basically went very well. We actually had nobody in attendance at the public hearing. Was interesting, but not what we're used to.
Housing is such an important issue.
Mm-hmm.
I just spent 6 months on this leadership thing that said, you know, well, I guess land use was the number one, but it was a contributing factor, as it contributed almost to housing, economic development, rural areas, everything. So it came
yeah.
back to land use is the biggest deal.
Well, you know, the so I sent the draft out to the Realtors Association, to the Builders Association.
Do you send them a clean draft, or do you send them the track changes?
I send them the one that goes to public hearing.
Which is the clean draft, the proposed final.
It's the one that shows the what's changing in the code.
Well, so it does a track change.
Yeah.
What
so
was there, what you plan on deleting, and
mm-hmm.
what you plan on adding.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So it gives total context.
Right. So I'm just going to dive into it right away and boil it down. I'm going to take it in order that they were presented in the document. The first part of it is on emergency permitting. And basically it says that if you have a legal habitable structure that was destroyed by a natural disaster, you can get the permit at no cost, provided we can verify there was a disaster, you know, that you didn't burn it yourself. And if we do not issue that permit within 48 hours, it's automatically granted. You assume it's granted.
Is that a previously permitted structure or a non-permitted structure?
Well, it would be legal habitable, so it's either permitted
or
grandfathered. Yeah. So if it's an illegal structure.
How do you prove grandfathered of a burned structure?
We can go back.
Or whatever.
A lot of times we'll go back on the assessor's records.
Okay.
Our records might show it. Or the assessor's records.
Okay.
In some cases, you have to go back on old air photos. So.
Yeah, or somebody's. I mean, we may not have a whole lot of air photos from prior to 1976 that could be proof. You know. So.
Yeah, but assessor's records help us a lot.
Yeah,
we rely on those a lot. Okay, the next one is the accessory dwelling units. And so I have to let you know that the DLCD did comment on the accessory dwelling units. And basically, they said that. They would be suing us if we went forward with that. But they recommended some things they could live with, so I made the changes that they suggested. Some of it are quite simple. One is they didn't want them called accessory dwelling units because the state has their definition of accessory dwelling units, and they thought it would be confusing to the people. I said, well, counties can have their own definition, but they said, you know, we really want you to change it. And I said, okay, we'll change it. So what it was in this draft, what they recommended was it be called accessory living quarters. So that was one of the changes we made. The other one is they did not want to see them in the resource.
ALQ. That's our acronym. ALQ.
Yeah. So they did not.
Can we just living accessory quarters so we can call them lackeys?
Well.
Oh, yeah.
They also had some other things.
Sorry, I had to play.
You know, so they, there's other things like they don't want dining tables or dining rooms. So I
what
put that in.
What are these people thinking?
They have no.
Who cares?
They can't dictate what furniture goes into a home.
Who cares?
That's an eating area.
They can't dictate if you put a table in a home. It's not a permanent structure.
They want to be able to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
They did not oppose, say anything about the fact that people could have breakfast bars, flip down tables. So it is that it says dining table. So the other one.
This is a great example of how out of touch, out of control this organization is.
Yeah.
That organization is.
But we're finding a way to, so
you
the
have
changes.
Have that in writing or something?
I do.
You know, all I'm going to say is, you know how often, I don't eat at my dining table, ever. I never eat there. I gather there.
I've had it for like 3 or 4 years. Yeah. I just bought it because it was pretty and perfectly small.
Mm-hmm. I have had company over to play cards at that gathering table. I have never eaten at it. So
I guess you'd qualify there.
They can pound sand because it's not a dining table. It's a
recreational
table.
It's your poker table.
Well, what they did is they wanted us to scrap everything we had and just do exactly what Jackson County has. And I looked at it and I said, well, the only thing is they don't allow a dining space and the oven. And I said, so why can't I just change that in our code? And they're like, well, that'd do it too, yeah. So that's what we're going with. In this draft.
Okay.
So anyways, so there's one per, you get, as long as you have a house on the lot, you get one per lot. The size of this LQ cannot exceed 50% of the floor area of the primary home.
You said something in there about that or 600 feet or something. Why don't we just pick 600 feet? I don't like the math element of it. Just pick a limit and go with six.
Except it could be.
Well.
I don't care.
What if they want to swap them at some point?
You have that, it's in the beginning.
Well, I guess the original thought was it is accessory. It shouldn't be dwarfing the primary home. So if you have a small home.
Feet.
It's tiny.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really care. If 600 feet worked for some.
600 is actually a pretty good size.
We're not saying
that.
Square feet, or are we saying feet?
Square feet. Feet. Square feet.
It's always square.
We can get rid of the floor area.
Well, we're not doing this right now, right? The Rural Planning Commission's hearing this, and then
no, they did.
Oh, it's coming to us now.
They recommended this go to the board. They recommended it.
Did they make any changes or any?
One change.
That's it?
One change.
Mm-hmm. You made more than one change per page. Jeez.
Okay, so we can get rid of the floor area if that's what you want to do.
Well, you and I are going to have to sit down because I don't think I can.
I don't want to adversely affect somebody. I'd rather have an either-or option if it needs to benefit. I don't want to.
Well, the max would be six.
Uh-huh.
So you don't adversely impact anybody by saying.
But it's not. Is it listed there now that the max is 600 or just 50% of the
other? It says 50%. So if you have a small home that's 1,100 square feet, you only.
But my 3,000 square foot house that I don't have.
If you have an 1,100 square foot home, you only get a 550. So mm-hmm. If you had a cookie cutter 600 foot design, sorry, you're going to have to whack off 50 feet from somewhere. Really? Who cares?
Yeah.
600 is fine. If your house is 1,000 square feet, and you've got a cookie cutter design that's 600, it's still smaller. You know, six is fine. I think we need to be more. This is.
But when
a
Arthur's
lot,
house, when
it
he
needs
wants
to be
extra
simple.
One, he needs a 1,500.
Everything we should look for regulation should be simple. As simple as possible. When you talk about property owner or manager, actually, I don't care who it is. It's the manager that I care about. The property owner, if they're on there, will be designated the property manager. So you cut out property owner. It's the designated manager. It's things like that that just cut through. And it doesn't matter. It's manager.
Okay.
And there's 100.
We'll get to those.
A little. So. There's not 100. There's a couple of those.
Okay.
Of like,
okay, so we can cut out the floor area.
Yes.
It has to be within 100 feet of the primary home. That's to make it easier to, because we're trying to encourage them to hook up to the existing septic to keep the cost down.
Is DLCD okay with that?
Well, you'll notice that these are found in the temporary use section.
What does it matter to us whether or not it costs more?
We're if we, we're trying to encourage affordable housing, so when you...
Totally get that, but I don't care about providing for some, you know, if I'm an owner of a property, I want an ADU, I don't really care what it costs. It means nothing to me to dig a trench for 600 feet.
Well, that's for the people that can afford them, but let's say that you
but
don't have...
But why force it in there just to force the cheap thing? It can be 100 feet from the place,
if I only have $10 in my wallet, I'm going to dig that thing 10 feet. It's not going to be 100 feet. You know what I mean? The cost is the regulator.
The person will design it based on what they can afford.
Right?
It shouldn't be us putting the restriction on...
That's just a philosophy. I don't know if it...
Yeah, and there's the other side of it, too, that this is supposed to be accessory. You know, it's supposed to be... When I view accessory, it's part of that home.
What's the zones for these?
All zones? It was, except for DLCD took the resource zones out.
See, I totally disagree with that from a standpoint of carrying capacity and mitigating the challenge with the neighbors. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to find more resistance in an RR area of adding more people. People don't like people in RRs. They just don't like their neighbors. They think they move up here and buy 5 acres from California, and it's this huge estate, and then come to find out their neighbor likes dirt bikes and horses and stuff they don't like. Well, dogs.
Yeah.
But on a resource zone, 80 acres or 40 acres or 20 acres, you don't even know the person.
Yeah,
doing.
I guess, you know, the other thought is, because we deal with so much stuff, you know, I look at it from so many angles. Like, the other one is, if you have, let's say you have 5 acres and these two units are this way, this really isn't accessory anymore, and there's really no accountability anymore. This is really like being on a separate lot,
right?
And we're going to start running into problems with the noise and everything
else.
So what
if we have that restriction based on a percentage of size or the lot size? I mean, we just did, and I argued against it, of the percentage of the size of the original house predicating the size of the accessory dwelling, but you could say the distance from blah, blah, blah being based on, if you have 5 acres, you're going to be 100 feet. If you have 10 acres, you're going to be 15 acres, you're going to be 300 feet or something like that. That's a proportional justification.
So this also replaces the standard medical hardship rules, right?
Right.
So this is, you got to keep in mind, one of the intents of this is you're taking care of your loved one or they are taking care of you. So you do want them closer together.
Maybe.
I mean,
you've seen people in those situations are challenging.
Oh. Yes, as long as they can go back to their space,
yeah,
it's okay.
Right. That's the point.
So what we're trying to do is actually have something in there to mitigate separate, basically two homes on a lot situation.
Yeah.
Where all once we've got problems and they've got their whole 2 campers, 5 cars coming in and out. When it's close to the home, there's more accountability there to keep it under control.
It's better for fire mitigation, defensible space style stuff.
I still don't understand why they have issues with guest house. It's just not that big a deal.
Yeah, I agree, but I think we need to.
I know.
To find
I'm not taking
a round peg for a round hole.
So I have no trash within 50 feet of the home, because on some of these, and I'll be honest, that was put in there at first when we were allowing them in the resource zones, because we're trying to keep down any fire hazards and mitigations like that.
Yeah,
so
I thought the Senate Bill 360 called for 100 feet of defensible space, but is our RLDC Article 9176 only called for 50 feet?
I don't have the code right here. I don't know.
It seems really short. I thought it was longer. I thought it reflected Senate Bill 360 of 100 feet, and I was trying to look it up, but that ORS 77.02 is, I mean, that goes.
You want me to look it up?
It goes, it's long. Well, we can do it some other time.
Yeah, I can look that up. So then it has that it's not allowed in a resource zone. Okay, so we got to
push back on that.
Okay. Then one of the things that.
I may not even be here.
Yeah.
One
of the things that. So we made all the changes, made DLCD happy, and then they came back with this other one that they didn't want it to say dwelling at all. They didn't want the word dwelling at all. So it says, so wherever, for example, it says the director is authorized to permit a second dwelling only on an authorized lot. Now that was always in our code. That was something that was always in there. Julie didn't propose that, and they said, we don't like that in there. So dwelling was changed to structure slash addition to provide additional living space.
Good night. That is so stupid. It's the same thing. Defined living space. It's a dwelling where people reside.
So detached living space was added that it shall mean, okay, so it says it shall mean a temporary single family structure which is ancillary to the legal primary dwelling on the lot or parcel. We're adding now. Has no dining table or dining room. May
no.
have an induction cooking
surface,
but no wiring for or installation of a conventional
I will not puzzle. Support them saying no dining table. I do not care what they say. I will not support that. That is hogwash. You cannot tell someone they can have a, you know, a hide-a bed versus a couch versus a this and that.
Sean,
it
it's
is
pound sand and hogwash. Those are cool.
I'm sorry. That is ludicrous.
Totally agree. But we'll see what we have to
They
do.
Cannot tell somebody what furniture they put in their home.
Well, appliances.
But a
furniture.
Table is not an appliance.
A table constitutes an eating area, which to them
I can tell you, I play five
space.
Crowns or, you know, on it, but I do not eat at my table.
I'll get you the DLCD yeah. comments.
That's fine.
Okay.
These are comprehensive. They're quite...
Yeah, sorry.
They're good, but they're... I have to read every line and think about it. You know, devil's advocate on every side.
Yeah, that's why it's taken
a
long time to get them together.
Yeah.
I can understand them saying dining space, but not dining table.
Yes.
They do not get to dictate somebody's furniture.
I would prefer they say dining table, because then I can still have a breakfast bar, a flip-down table.
Well, then why are you putting
what's
dining space?
What's the rationale for not having a
Do you want to be up here for this? You can come up with this.
What was their rationale for
because
not having a table?
Because that constitutes dining space, and that is something that would only be allowed in a single
A coffee table could constitute dining space.
I'm more likely to eat at my coffee table than I am at a dining table.
A four-legged chair could be a dining space for some people.
A lot of people eat at TV trays.
I have those as well.
That's
why
I said, I'm fine with saying no dining room table because I know that there's ways people can still eat in that one.
How do you find that on a blueprint? Nobody puts their furniture on a
blueprint. Exactly. It's not
like,
justified.
What are you checking? You're going to go, you know, show up around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock?
They have no authority over something that is not attached to the building.
Well, what are we going to do? Show up and take it away?
Exactly. Oh, you're out of code. You have a dining table.
Yeah, but how do they delineate one way or the other? That it's there or it's not there?
Well, what is a dining table, even? Again, that's the central question. What's a dining table?
Yeah, I will not support that in any way, shape, or form.
It seems really weird that it would be in the code.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You cannot have a love seat. You may have a rocker, but not a couch. I mean, they cannot dictate somebody's furniture.
Well, we don't need to believe
yeah,
it.
Now, I understand what they're getting after is allowing a space for gathering. But the only time I gather around my table is for visiting.
I think we should say that. I'm okay with not saying, you know, a designated dining room.
Yeah. Oh, we can do that. That'll work. That'll meet the thing. So,
sorry. I don't mean to get so passionate over a table.
Well, it's finding an alternative solution that meets their needs, but better than they.
Yeah.
We're okay with there not being a dining room. It's 600 square feet. They don't have space for designating a dining room.
And I think DLCD will be okay with that because that's what they're getting at.
Yes.
And I read it and I'm like, so we can't have a dining table? And
I do not technically have a dining room.
Me neither.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, so there's a lot of semantics games we're playing on that, but we've got it. Okay.
That's great.
So. Temporary storage of a mobile home. Right now, we allow it to be stored for 6 months. I'm proposing that be changed to 60 days. There's two elements to that. One is, if we have a housing crisis, let's get these mobile homes back into the housing market so they're being used. The other one is, a lot of times they're abused, and what happens is they get forgotten about. Somebody moves in, then we get a camper, then we get a compound. So,
or they just sit there and deteriorate. And then
yeah, they do.
They were worth something, but now they're worth nothing.
Yeah.
And then they sit there even longer because they're not worth anything.
Right. And I did remove them from the serpentine zones. We allow them in the serpentine, the temporary storage in serpentine. And serpentine is kind of like an RR where it's more residential in nature. So you don't want vacant
It's definitely
things.
Not resource.
No.
But it could be commercial.
you can have some commercial uses in there, yeah.
It's, I mean, we just included it in our enterprise zone.
Yep. It's residential. You got residential, some commercial uses. The thing is, it's not good for growing crops or ag.
It's not good for a lot. But.
Yeah. So they're being used for a lot of things. Okay. Cluster subdivisions. Cluster subdivisions is something that I've been working on for 2 years with the state, and so far they're so good with it. So if you remember right now, if
yeah,
you,
we liked the idea.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Good.
So I don't have to go through that.
No.
The only thing is they did ask that we put a minimum acreage in there, so I did put a minimum of 2 acres, and they were okay with that.
Good.
2 acre lots to do
minimum
cluster
2 acre
clusters.
Lots. So even if it's RR5, we still have a minimum 2 acre lot.
Is this rounding? Just kidding.
Oh. There is a formula you use. Oh, I'm sorry, I'll go through the bonus options. So we talked about that before, but just real quick, so you get extra points for those extra lots. It's all if all the lots are not on prime farmland, that's 2 points. If no lots are in a flood plain, you get 2 points. If they're on a flat slope, you get 2 points. No granitic soils, you get 2 points. Shared well or septic, you get 4 points. If you install a road, it's 4 points. If you have contiguous open space to other contiguous open space, it's 4 points. And then for every 4 points, you actually get another lot, is how that works.
Sounds interesting.
So if you have...
I don't need...
Okay.
No, no, go ahead if you had more questions.
Well, there's an advantage to it. I mean,
yeah.
Right now, you don't get anything. You can do all these positive things that add to the carrying capacity of your designated area of development. What's the incentive? You don't get anything for it.
Right.
You know, shared access is one of those you said?
Uh-huh.
You get a couple of points for that.
Road.
So every 4 points you get, it balances out to say, yeah, if you do all these things, you should get another lot.
Mm.
And that helps us create more lots, which means they can be sold for less than if we required every lot to be 5 acres in size.
Totally.
Spread out. So
well,
they're also easier to develop.
30 years ago, the development in Josephine County would be totally different.
Absolutely.
It would be transitionally different.
Absolutely.
Everybody would have done this. I think they would have, I mean, and the timing of this for that 60 acres that we have on Ridgecrest or anywhere else that there's an RR5, if we have 1,200 developable lots in Josephine County, which is what that pilot project said 5 years ago or 3 years ago, their restrictions and being able, the fiscal impediments to them being developed are going to be greatly reduced.
Well, and the other good thing of this, I mean, we're creating those affordable lots, but the other thing is we're preserving farmland,
yeah.
And we're not fragmenting habitat,
yeah.
Which is a big thing as well, which is something we have
so
done a terrible
job
of. So in
this negotiation, can we, like, remove the deer winter range? Because we're doing such a positive thing over here, saying that the migratory element of the species has already been mitigated in our code to the degree that...
Well, that's a good point. You know, I still haven't heard back from ODFW on their proposal, but let's do that one separate. Let's get this on the books first. So boarding houses were only allowed in the rural commercial. We're adding them to rural residential, the resource zones, serpentine, and we're redefining it. Hostels, we're defining because we don't do it right now, and we're adding that to the rural commercial.
Is a hostel different than a boarding house, and why do you have to have that one by a nonprofit? Is that the difference?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. That's the
Are all hostels nonprofit?
They're supposed to be, yeah.
I don't feel that way when I've been in them in other countries.
They could be just calling it a hostel. Like a lot of times you'll go to a bed and breakfast, but it's really permitted as something else. I mean,
well, it looked like a hostel.
Well, and I've been to one in San Francisco, and you know, they had an option, do you want a private bathroom? Yes. I was in a hotel that was 100 years old across the street that was an extension of the hostel.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay, I'll
maybe a nonprofit bought it and they just were operating it at cost, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Was it cheap?
No. Well, yes, for San Francisco, much cheaper.
That's probably what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have, Oregon Health Authority has definitions for hostel.
Okay.
So anyways, it's a little different than what we have because I use the land use definition, but it's the same thing.
That's fine.
So, okay, tourist home, we're adding to rural commercial. Retreat centers, we're adding to rural commercial. Serpentine, limited development, we're defining it.
We have a lot of rural commercial, do we?
No.
How how are we accommodating the cutting edge stay and stuff?
Well, retreat centers I did have in the resource zones, and I was asked to take that out.
But we accommodated those resource requirements by like 200-foot setbacks and designated parking areas that were outside of the view of the neighbors and stuff like that. I mean,
so DLCD, their rationale is you can only have what they allow by statute, and they don't list retreat centers in the resource zones. So they had me remove.
They also don't allow housing in all of them. I mean, or unless there was a road to a this or a, I mean, I'm just thinking Woodlot.
Of course, commercial is a challenge for getting a house, but you can do it on 40.
I think it depends when the lot was created and the types of soil. Sometimes it's 40, sometimes it's 80.
Yeah.
But that one that we're dealing with, that appeal, that was all about putting in a dwelling on a Woodlot resource. And I don't know.
Well, anyway, so,
okay.
And then conference grounds, our code already allows conference grounds. That's nothing I proposed. DLCD asked that we remove it, so I deleted it. So,
I think you're giving up too much of stuff that we already have and that isn't challenged.
Well,
can't they challenge stuff?
With the conference grounds, you know, I'm trying to keep them happy. With the conference grounds, I have to agree. I mean, when you're looking at conference grounds, that should be on sewer and water. It really should. I mean, when you're looking at a large facility like that, that's a lot on a private septic.
Potentially, but I can see, you know, like the goal 8 exception. There would be conference facilities at Paradise Ranch potentially. And those situations, there are I guess, exceptions.
Well, and keep in mind, so they have that destination resort,
right,
which is like an overlay over the ag, so they can do stuff that's not allowed in ag because they have that overlay.
Yeah, they have.
So somebody would have to, if they wanted to do that, they'd have to do the same type of thing here.
Okay.
So,
well,
right.
I would hope that you're giving, I'm doing something with the feds, and when I give something, I get something. Don't give something unless you're getting something.
I think we're getting a lot out
of
it.
Okay, good.
So. So, right-of-ways, currently if you have a piece of property and a road bisects it, that's still one piece of property. So really one side of it is
useless.
So what this says is if a public road right-of-way, rail right-of-way, wild and scenic river, or class one stream bisects property, it's really two lots.
Or a particular utility thoroughfare, easement. That might work too. I'm thinking of a transmission line or a gas pipeline. You can't do anything with those. We don't have the developed pipeline going through Josephine County, but they're looking for a 100-foot easement through property. So you could see, you know, like a woodlot resource being bisected by this, and you can't do anything in that area where there's the pipeline or a potential transmission line or something. That might be, but like a distribution line, no, that doesn't impact your ability to use it. So there's like a threshold of utility that would...
Here's the other thing. This is not allowed in the resource zones.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I should have interrupted.
Road easements and flag lots, we've talked about that.
What is Portland Concrete?
It's just a brand.
Okay.
It's not all Portland concrete.
Or Portland cement. I'm sorry, asphaltic concrete or Portland cement?
It's just cement. Portland used to be a brand.
Why would we put a brand in the code?
Well, they call stuff like, I'm trying to think of something. Kleenex. It's not all Kleenex. Kleenex
True.
Is a brand.
Okay.
Conex boxes. Conex boxes is really a brand.
Mm-hmm. They're not all Coke.
Okay. So this is just one of those examples.
I came up with those really quick. I was thinking.
Well done. Way to tag team everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, so
and we got rid of the 25-foot requirement for the...
Leg lots?
Correct, but so it still has the entrance has to be 25 feet.
No, we did not get rid of that. What we did was we created an option. So what happens is if you have a lot, you can put lots you can build lots behind it now without requiring that wasted little flagpole off of everyone.
That every one of those lots, developed lots, has to have its own access to.
Well, what's crazy is the lot has to touch a public road. So you have 25-foot flag lots.
That's what's in the code right now.
In the code. But you can't even put your driveway on those usually because of the fact that they're spacing requirements. So you have all these wasted little flag strips. People think they own them. They put driveways down there. Then they're in trouble.
They need to be shared access points with easements.
So what this does is it says you can just have one easement to access all these slots that are behind each other.
Are you requiring a maintenance agreement with those?
Yes, we do.
Good.
Yep.
Because that's been the biggest contention, is people didn't want to allow easements for private use to access a public road, because everybody would say, oh, it's not my responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, I only use 25 feet. Well, I only use the next 25 feet or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's just a disaster. Nobody takes care of the road. And it's.
Well, what this is, it does require a 30-foot described easement. So on the deed, it has to be described. So you can't come back and argue it was over here or whatever. So it has to have that meets and bounds description. And then within there, we don't regulate the actual width. We just say it has to be wide enough for rescue and emergency vehicles.
And our code says 12 feet right now, but they're advocating, we're meeting with the Fire Defense Board. In the LDAC committee that was set up eight years ago, they had a recommendation of separate things on private road access standards for emergencies, and they wanted 80,000 pound
capacity
bridges or culverts, and they wanted 14 foot thoroughfares, and I think our code only calls for 10 or 12 right now.
Well, this, with the easement, it doesn't specify a width, it just, I mean, other than what's described by deed.
But our code does describe what an emergency, what it should be someplace else. Private road standards, or?
Possibly,
yeah.
Not so. In this one, though, because this is a new definition.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But, you know, I can clarify if we want a minimum or something in there, we can.
I just don't want it. I don't think it's always required to have two full lanes. I don't think 25 feet is necessary always.
Not always. It depends on how many lots you're developing. Mm-hmm.
But you do want.
But I know a family who has 20 acres. They want to put four houses up there and divide them.
Mm-hmm.
And.
You're going to need. Yeah.
But it's one of those things. They're all family members, you know, and it's.
They are today.
Yeah.
True. So that's why you have the deeded 30 feet, because someday, if that ever does become a road, you want it to at least be two lane. So.
And you don't want to have to do property acquisition in order to get there.
Mm. So we're planning ahead on that one.
Yeah.
So. The other thing is I do require a 30-foot setback from that deeded easement. Again, if it ever does become a road, you want to make sure your structures meet a road setback. So.
Great.
What if they already aren't?
Then they would just be grandfathered. Yeah.
Well, then you wouldn't get the easement.
No, I'm saying that if what they were offered is too close to a home.
You wouldn't put the easement there. You wouldn't put the easement there. You'd have to jog
or get a
variance. Like we were doing with Allen Creek. You'd have to either get a variance or you'd have to jog the road to accommodate the 30-foot.
Yeah.
There's a consistency issue somewhere where I was just reading. I think it's towards the end of where we put 60-foot setback from the road, but our for temporary shelters and stuff, but our setback from property lines is 50 feet. You need to pick one. Just pick 50 feet or something like that. Your other one is 30 feet.
So a lot of times when you see me doing that, I'm just doubling what the requirement is. So if your required setback is 30, I'm doubling it to 60.
Okay.
So that's where we get some of those numbers.
Okay, so
let's talk about erosion control and runoff. Currently, if you are building on a slope greater than 15%, or if you have granitic soils, you need to submit a stormwater management plan with your building. So a garage, you need a several $1,000 stormwater management plan.
If you're building on 15% or granitic soils.
Or granitic soils, yes. So what we do by policy, which we need to make it code, is if it's completely flat and an engineer sends a letter saying it's flat, they waive the stormwater management plan. This would add, instead of that just being a policy, that becomes code. And then,
so is it just their property's flat?
Yes.
Because their property may be flat, but it's right across from a ravine that's not flat, and the ravine's not their property, but their runoff on their flat goes to that ravine, causing erosion. It still needs to be mitigated.
Well, the letter the engineer has to sign saying all water is contained on site okay. stuff like that. So, anyways, what
we talked about this before, Julie, and I don't want to belabor this point, and you can tell me no, but I don't really. The rules are the rules. They're state rules, and the developer just needs to comply with them and know that they're going to be in violation if water does adversely impact. Because I've got developers who are, I don't need to go talk to an engineer. I've been doing this for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what I need to do. Every time I go talk to an engineer, like you said, it's a couple $1,000s. And, you know, and this kid just got out of college. He doesn't know any more about this than I do, the developer. Can I just sign something that says that I'm fully aware of the laws and the regulations and, you know, pay my $50 and... You can take me to court if I do something wrong, but...
We could. I guess from a planning perspective, it's not the most responsible way to govern land use, I guess, because of the fact that what you have are... Because it happens all the time. You know, we can't do anything, so people are left to sue each other, and all they're doing is fighting out there.
Yeah, but what happens if we do permit it and it doesn't work out? The engineer gets it wrong. Who's responsible then?
The engineer. I mean, again, that's a civil suit, but at
Do
least
we
we've taken...
Them?
No, we would...
What are the protections that we're accomplishing for the resident, the neighbor, by asking them to have an engineer sign off on it? It feels like all roads of a violation lead to the land, the neighbor suing the neighbor.
So right, yes, exactly. So right now, the neighbor sues the neighbor. Well, they fight. Eventually, sometimes it goes to a lawsuit. My understanding with this is the neighbor can now also drag in that engineer into the lawsuit. So the engineer has accountability to make sure that it is flat. We could sue him as well,
but
right?
We're not going to.
We wouldn't.
I can't see where we would. We'd
I'm
let
just
the
trying
neighbors
to look
it.
At the game
yeah.
and say, how are we actually doing something that we couldn't accomplish? I mean, having them sign off on saying, hey, no, all of the regulations on one pager. These are your requirements to do this on granicular soils for points over 15% relative to stormwater management. You don't do these things, and here's your potential liability. And they sign off on that. They go to the neighbor goes and does a FOIA request or whatever we call it in the state. It says right there, you signed this, dude, and I'm taking you to court, and you're going to lose because you signed right here. And I've got evidence that says you didn't do it. I think we accomplished kind of the same thing, but the responsible people, we're holding people who are really good and responsible to the least common denominator of somebody who isn't, but really offering nobody any greater protection by doing it, only adversely impacting the person who actually is responsible and doesn't really need an engineer to tell them, yeah, you need to put in ditches. And
I'll bring an example to you for the next meeting, one that we had this
week.
Well,
just you and I can, I don't know that Commissioner Morgan's. She's not passionate about this one like tables, but...
So it's there's no hogwash involved here.
So this one also, you know, we don't address non-granitic soil.
I do need to pause for a second. Looking at the time, you have 7 minutes before you have to leave, and we have many other things on the agenda, including a plat to be approved and a advisory board.
We have general discussion this afternoon.
Are you going to be here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Then maybe what we
and
can
I'm
do is...
And I'm fine with the advisory appointment, and I'd make a motion to approve GOF. Grow final plat item 5B if you're cool with that.
So you made the motion, I'll second that. Any further comment? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the
motion
plat's
carries.
Approved. Motion carries. And I'm okay with moving forward the appointment to the consent calendar.
And I've heard from Arthur enough this week, so.
I just want to make sure
kidding,
that we're mindful of your time as far as that goes.
Appreciate
and you will be there this afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll
ahead,
zip
Julie.
Through this real quick because we're almost done. So we don't address non-granitic soils. So it says you only need that stormwater management plan on those if it exceeds 5,000 cubic yards. So not everybody, but...
Well, that's substantial, so that sounds fine.
And then on granitic soils with less than a 3% slope, you would have that waiver allowed, which is that letter. The other thing is, right now at the current time... nobody enforces best management practices, you know, like silt fences or straw bales and things of that nature. It's left up to DEQ to do it. DEQ is not involved in the residential permitting process, so it's not being done. So what ours does is require them to follow best management practices. And we have the book here, which
That's great.
Yeah, so this is what they, it's minor, it's easy.
Clackamas does a really good job, actually, of some of that stuff. You see a lot of berms, you see a lot of hedgeways, you see a lot of different things that they use for noise, sight, runoff.
We've just never addressed it, which is a shame. We had farm stays, we treat them like a bed and breakfast, it's a maximum of 4 rooms. Camping by state law.
A question, you mentioned the big farmer out in Applegate. Was it blueberries?
It's on the Applegate, isn't it? Yes.
But the concern was there was a restriction of their not migrant workers.
30 days, and they need them for, you know, they start out with 3 different harvests, I think. They go through 3 cycles. They don't have time. They can't get it all done in 30 days. It's real tough.
And so I
is
didn't
that a state
see that
restriction.
Camping is limited to 30 days if you're on a resource zone.
But for farmland, if there's a specific
farm workers, farm
approved farm,
farm use.
At the current time, there is nothing at state level other than the camping. So I'm guessing they're probably treating them as the camping.
No, they're farm worker residences. Permitted it. They've got 30 capacity for 30 people out there. They own a hotel in town so that they can have capacity. And they run a shuttle and they cater breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
So on
a major operation.
It reminds me of the farms in Eastern Oregon where they feed all their people all day long.
Yep, all day.
So those are farm dwellings as well. But they're not limited to 30 days.
I thought they were. Couldn't have.
No, the only thing that's limited to 30 days is the campers camping on prop resource zones.
Yeah, this is like a double wide mobile home, bunk.
That wouldn't be us.
Showers, everything.
But so anyways, state law says in resource zones it's limited to 30 days. That's not in our code, so we're putting that in there so people read it so we hopefully avoid some of the problems we're having. It also creates rules to allow camping during construction, which we do not have right now. So, one thing that's brand new that you did not see before you, last Friday, we found out when you're developing a campground in a resource zone, DLCD, there was a Senate bill that says DLCD needs to review that before it goes to the county. So we're just adding that in because we just found that out. So.
Isn't that backwards? Usually don't we do it and then they send it?
No, they want. The LCD wants to review the soils on it before it comes to us. So,
what kind of a soil restriction is there? You can't have too good a soil, or you?
It has to, in order to put a campground out there. Yeah, they want it to be. They don't want you to take prime farmland or active land.
Is there a capacity for evaluating access to irrigation to designate prime farmland? So if you don't have access, I mean, it could be pretty good soil, but it's not worth much if you don't have access to irrigation.
That's my understanding, because we're actually dealing with that on one right now.
That's really key, and I don't feel like that was always a consideration. It's not part of what was our historic CIRR component, but...
Do you want me to add something in there to make that more clear?
I would think so. You know, access to irrigation is a contributing factor to prime farm something.
Okay. Then we get into these shelter things. So we have the non-traditional shelter, which I'll give you an example, is you have that central kitchen, office, workout room, and then you have 15 units all around, up to 15 units all around, without kitchens, okay? So they're all sharing one kitchen, which means they're one dwelling. So we're
they have to have their own bedroom and own bathroom?
They don't have to,
I read something
but they can.
Here I think that they were required to have their own restroom.
They could all share, I'll look at
there
that.
There was a shared shower component, but they,
I think it
mentions that they shall have their own bedroom and bathroom or something like
I'll
that.
I'll check on the word shall, I thought, I didn't think I was requiring it, but I'll look at that,
yeah.
Shall.
I've got bathroom. It written down. You and I are going to have to go through this.
So I didn't have a maximum, and the state asked that we put a maximum on because you do have residential care facilities that have, a residential care home is a maximum of 5 units. Residential care facility is maximum 15, so they asked that we put those maximums in, so we did.
Okay.
Not in resource zones. Individual units cannot exceed 300 square feet. And that's of like those tiny villages, veterans homes, things like that. Transitional housing camp, basically what this is, you have these tiny homes on wheels, it's a big trend. Well, they're permitted it as, or I'm sorry, there are RVs and they belong in a campground. So what this does is it sets up where you can have transitional housing camp, which would include RVs, Connex box conversions, park models, tiny homes, which are 250 foot max in a campground. The camping stay rules apply to that. And it's, this is where it says manager has to reside on site, because I don't want to get where it's really a compound.
Yes.
I want it to be, we're going to license them as campgrounds. They have to actually have, you know, a public restroom.
And the word designated manager, you know, that has to be delineated somewhere that, you know, oh, we've got a manager. It's Joe. It's Joe this week, mm-hmm. and Lily next week. And, you know, it's got to be, who is it? Who do we go to?
Well, and the one, so this is the one change the Plan Commission made. I had, for all of those, it's a maximum of 250, and they wanted 320 because you do have 8-foot by 40-foot RVs. So they suggested instead of the 250 max, it'd be a 320. So. Transitional housing shelter. That is basically, easiest way to say it is, it's allowed in commercial and industrial only. It's a three-sided structure where people can sleep in there with their tents or whatever. It has to be within 1 mile of a bus stop, owner or manager on site. Open a maximum of 16 consecutive hours so we don't have homeless people living there. It's really just meant for sleeping purposes. It has to have that common restroom with advertising social services, emergency contacts. It has to have a fenced dog run. It has to have a security plan and no drug use on site. So it really is just a place to sleep. Then we had the farm use labor housing, which are the barracks. That is in resource zones only if there's a house on site. Within 100 feet of the house, again, to make sure we have that accountability. No kitchen because we can't violate the two housing rule. No guns or narcotics. And I have here that it has to be licensed by ODA or OLCC. So, and ODA should take care of the blueberry farmer as well.
Yeah.
Miscellaneous is just a lot of new definitions and amendments to the index. That's it.
We don't have the capacity to enforce no guns or no drugs in that situation. I mean, that would be something that we would...
But I think if it was in there, we have a capacity to pull their permit.
Okay.
As a enforcement element, if it starts to get rowdy and there's the neighbors complaining about, hey, all they do is hang out all day and shoot their guns and do drugs.
Okay.
I don't know.
Which is happening now, and those are a lot of the problems and complaints we get. So.
This is good. You and I'll
meet.
Go through it.
So it'll come back?
Well, I would like to just...
Hearing.
Yeah, I would just like to finalize some things with the liaison and then send it to hearing. If you have questions, let's talk about them, because I'd really like it cleaned up before it goes to hearing.
So, and we'll have to have some time before it gets to hearing and stuff like that, so...
One of my thoughts was is that we're taking this comprehensively. It's really not that controversial, so I don't know that we're going to be, you know, appealed from some one element. What I don't want to do is have that controversial element that DLCD doesn't like hold up the entire thing because we're appealed to LUBA.
Can we?
Something we want to fight on.
Can we add that clause in there?
A severability clause.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to add a severability clause. So if one part is considered
controversial,
it'll just be separated and everything else that's good will be left.
Okay.
Be kept.
Whatever's challenged
will be dismissed from the rest instead of the whole document being dismissed.
So 1,000 Friends said that they don't always agree with DLCD, so they still may have some concerns. So we'd really want to make sure we have that.
But also, have we noticed? Have we done the noticing?
No, not yet.
Okay, we'll also have
we did for the Plan Commission, but that was it.
Okay, we'll have to do noticing. Wait, we did noticing for everybody for the Planning Commission
meeting? Just for the Planning Commission meeting, yeah.
And that was 20 days beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Then I think that
so you guys will go through the process, get it through the process, get towards a hearing, and the time frames that you need to, and the notifications. So is there any other business for today?
No, I think we can address, I don't really have much else. I did want to bring up the Balloon Festival, because I know that he's going out for other types of...
Funding,
and it just, you know, like a letter of intent. And while Julie's here, the idea of giving a couple of $1,000 to the Balloon Festival, we've never done that before, and for me, it's something I want to do. So
we're opening, just so you know, we're going to have everybody come in. Remember, we had the...
I don't mind saying no to Julie, not people. I have no problem doing that. Good habit and practice of that.
I guess we just have to justify why we're giving it to them and nobody else. Because we did turn one event down last year.
I can't think of another event I would be inclined to give money to, but they can ask.
Okay.
I don't mind them asking.
I think that we talked about up to
$5,000. Yeah. Yep. Sounds good.
Whose budget is that? I hope that works.
All right. Oh, so our meeting's adjourned at 10:05.